This tape is an introduction to the principles that are involved in interpretation of hair analysis. The understanding of these principles is critical to having a thorough understanding of what a hair analysis is revealing. Because of time constraints, it will be necessary to run through these principles rather rapidly. However, it would be prudent to listen to these principles again in your leisure time so that they become firmly fixed in your mind. If you fail to take these principles into account, it is impossible to fully understand what a hair analysis is really showing. The first principle is called the field effect principle. It's really a principle of holistic healing. What it states is that each of the factors which contribute to the picture of a total human being creates a kind of field effect. These factors would include that person's genetic inheritance, the way the mother was nourished, medications and other influences during gestation, physical accidents, emotional trauma, exposure to toxic metals, nutritional deficiencies acquired over time, emotional and mental attitudes, personal desires that were formed during childhood, and the present dietary habits, medications, and conditions of life. Each of these factors contribute a field of influence, like a sphere of influence. We must learn to view a person as the sum of the interactions of these fields. We might call this a nonlinear or multiple cause, multiple effect view of the human being. It is nonlinear because we can't say that A caused B and B caused C. All we can say is that condition A was present, condition B was present, and condition C was present, and that there is a relationship or a correlation. For example, perhaps the mother was deficient in zinc at the time of her pregnancy. Thus the baby is born deficient in zinc. Perhaps also the household upbringing was such that certain conditions of stress were influencing the person and affecting zinc levels. We may find peculiar dietary habits or a lifestyle factor, such as lack of sleep, that may also have been present. We can say that all of these factors were influencing this one person, but there is not one single cause and one single for a particular effect. It is a multiple cause, multiple effect, nonlinear situation in the sense that each factor, each field, interacts with every other factor or field to produce the total human being. As part of the field effect principle, there is a concept called the critical factor, which is that when we attempt to correct an individual's body chemistry, we must discover the critical factors in order to obtain full correction. Without ascertaining critical factors, we can only make partial correction. For example, we might correct a person's diet, but we might overlook a critical nutritional deficiency. Or we might correct a nutritional factor, but we might overlook an important emotional factor, the fact that a person is very resentful or angry. In different people, the critical factor or factors will be different. Sometimes it's something in the diet, something in the lifestyle. Maybe it's the fact that a person needs more sleep. Perhaps it's the fact that a personal relationship is working against a person very powerfully. So the idea of a critical factor is extremely helpful, especially when the corrective process with nutrition alone is not proceeding smoothly and we're not getting as good results as we know is possible. Even when we are getting results that are excellent, it is important to know that there are critical factors and that these should be corrected. The second principle is referred to as the hologram principle. A hologram is a special type of photograph in which you can cut off a piece of the photograph, and by shining the proper light through it, the entire photo can be reproduced. Hair analysis is, in a sense, quite similar to a hologram. The mineral values in that small sample of hair actually represent the biochemical functioning of the entire organism to us. In this case, hair represents the sum total of the various fields that are influencing a person. Hair analysis is a kind of a hologram showing many aspects, past, present, and even future, of a person. A final holistic principle is what we might call the domino principle. It is always important to remember that one factor affects another, which affects another, which in turn affects another. It is never one cause, one effect, and then it stops. So the domino principle is the idea that there are many chains of events taking place. For a very crude example, let's say that the diet is deficient in certain elements, which causes a loss of muscle strength. From lack of adequate muscle tone, the skeletal structure may become bent over, twisted, or scoliosed. This in turn affects the nerves going in and out of the spine. Here's a secondary effect. Now in turn, the reduced nerve energy may affect the flow of energy to digestive organs and the ability to digest food, or it might affect the nerves leading to the brain in some way, and therefore affect emotions and mental functioning. So on and so on. And this we refer to as the domino principle. It will help you to understand another important principle, which we might call the time factor. When we correct chemistry through hair analysis, there is a time element. The total correction may take several years, in some cases 5 years. You can't simply correct diet and expect everything else to shape up immediately. The reason is because the domino effect is in principle, is in action. The adequate diet has caused everything else to malfunction, to compensate, to adapt. And because of that, when we begin making correction, the corrections have to reverberate throughout the organism and begin to undo a chain of subtle pathologies or abnormalities. One nice thing about the domino effect is that this principle is always true in reverse for the correction process. That is, just as one incorrect aspect of a person's lifestyle, such as diet, has repercussions throughout the organism, so when we correct one element, such as nutrition, everything else begins to correct. Often the structure will begin to return to normal. Excessive emotions will begin to be minimized and normalized, and other abnormalities will begin to correct by themselves. You're dealing with a holographic system that over a period of time is compensated for a deficiency of elements by shifting around every bit of the organism to do its best for survival. Therefore, there must be a time factor in correction. This is often frustrating, and if you don't understand this principle, you will say, how come the program takes so long? Why do I have to stay on the program for 2 years or 3 years? It is because you're not only dealing with nutritional deficiencies, you're dealing with many subtle adaptive changes that have occurred over an extended period of time. Now we'll consider another set of principles. The first set was what we might call holistic principles. The second set are more directly related to the hair mineral chart. The previous set of principles were what we might call principles of correction, principles of understanding health and disease. The principles we'll now discuss deal specifically with hair analysis. The first principle is called the systems principle. The principle states simply that when you look at a hair analysis, you are looking at a system, the mineral system. This is critical because many health professionals make the mistake of trying to read one mineral number value on a hair chart at a time. And they will interpret one as being significant, and they will conveniently skip over another value. I have a tape by a physician in which he goes through a hair chart and analyzes it, and then in the end he says, oh, by the way, the mercury was very high. We'll have to take care of that. That is an example of not looking at the chart as a system, but rather as isolated components. This is often the way we read blood tests and other tests. However, to get results in hair analysis and mineral balancing science, one of the key concepts is to look at the mineral number values as a mineral system in which every mineral affects every other. Every mineral affects the level and is affecting the level of every other mineral. We'll return to this concept later. A second principle, which is related to the first one, is called the compensation principle. This principle states that not only are the minerals a system, that is, not only does the level of each one affect the level of all others, but the mineral system is a special kind of system. It is a homeostatic, self-balancing, adaptive, and self-correcting system. What this means is that when you look at a hair analysis chart, not only are you looking at minerals which are affecting each other, but they are compensating for each other in order to produce the optimal survival value for that organism. This is a very critical principle because many times people will look at a zinc level, for instance, that is low, and they will attempt to raise the zinc level simply because it looks low. What they are not aware of is that that zinc level is low not because the person hasn't been getting enough zinc. It is low because the low zinc represents a compensation. Having that zinc low is keeping some other level or ratio balanced. We know, for example, that zinc lowers sodium levels. So perhaps it is necessary to keep the sodium level up in a certain person. The body will do this by keeping the zinc level low. That is called a compensation or a defender reaction. Now, if the low zinc level is a compensation for a low sodium, and you try to raise the zinc level, either the zinc won't come up, and you may decide that hair analysis doesn't work, or the zinc level will come up, and then the person will feel worse because you've interrupted a compensation or an adaptation. Another possibility is that by a strange interaction of the compensation mechanisms, the zinc level can actually go lower on the next analysis. The key point about the compensation principle is we don't want to correct compensations, we want to correct basic causes. One of the tasks of interpreting the hair test is to determine what we might call the critical mineral levels and ratios versus the mineral levels ratios that are merely compensating at the present time. In other words, at this time, zinc could be low to compensate for what would be a low sodium level. Later on, say when the sodium level is corrected, the zinc could rise to normal, and the zinc could be a primary critical element in the health of that person. The oxidation types are really types of compensation reactions that occur in the organism to promote its survival. Fast oxidation, slow oxidation, mixed oxidation are particular configurations of mineral ratios that are compensations for biochemical deficiencies or stress levels, representing an inability to cope with stress. These compensations optimize the survival of the organism. When we attempt to correct them, we have to look at them as compensations. So the principle of compensation is one of the very key principles to observe whenever we look at a hair mineral chart. Another principle that is simpler is what is referred to as averaging. And hair analysis chart represents an average of 2 to 3 months of mineral metabolism. That is, you are looking at the average rate of accumulation of mineral within that section of hair for a 2 to 3 month period. This is important to realize because sometimes you don't know from the chart readings whether that mineral was increasing over the 2 to 3 month period, decreasing, or staying the same. There's no way to tell except by looking at other minerals. For example, let's say you did a test on a person in January, and again in March, and again in June. During January, let's say the calcium level is rising from 50 to 200, but the average would be 100, and that's what you might assume that the calcium level is 100. That's what it will read. Let's assume in March the calcium level remains stable the whole month of March at 100. Again, you would get a reading of 100, and you would say it was the same as January. But really, it isn't the same, because in January it was rising from 50 to 200. The average was somewhere around 100. Let's say in June, when you retested the person, that the calcium actually was dropping from 200 to about 50. That would again give an average reading about 100. Yet, if you're not aware of the averaging principle, you might think that that person's calcium simply remained the same in all three of those tests, when in fact, very different metabolic events were taking place in each of those 3 months. So this is the averaging principle, and the importance of it is to realize that you are getting an average reading, unlike blood tests, which often give an instantaneous type of reading, which has its advantages and disadvantages. Another principle, which is very important, is called the principle of layers of adaptation. In mineral balancing science, it becomes very clear, after you work with many individuals, that you cannot understand the entire picture of a hair analysis from one test. To truly understand the whole picture, you need to look at a progression of tests over a period of time. If there is toxic metal poisoning, for example, it will obscure many of the mineral values until such time as these metals have been eliminated. Sometimes it takes 3 to 4 tests before underlying factors, such as a high amount of toxic metal, even become apparent. We must simply work with what we are presently seeing and then retest. The idea of the layers of adaptation is that when we take a first test, we are viewing the top layer. We correct what we see and wait. After several months, we retest again and we see a deeper layer. And we keep going through this until we get down to the basic chemistry of this person. But this can take time. It is a good assumption that there are layers of adaptation and compensation in everyone. During the correction process, oxidation rates will change. Toxic metals will go up and down. It's often amazing to find out how much can be stored in a body. A particular toxic metal may be dumped from one storage site. Then that there will be dormancy of that metal and it'll go down on the chart. Then a year later, another storage site may begin to dump and that toxic metal will rise again in the hair as it is being dumped. Oxidation rates will vary because the toxic metals and the other changes taking place will affect the entire metabolism. Often severe deficiencies will show up at a certain points. It's often amazing to watch these changes take place over a several year period as a person gets well. As the person gets well, it has to do with fewer and fewer layers of adaptation, which means more and more energy available. Person becomes more steady, stronger, more grounded, and actually will report to you a feeling of inner strength. So this concept of layers of adaptation, which in a sense is related to retracing through those layers, is a very important one. Realize that the hair analysis is only the top layer and that there may be many, many things underneath. We just deal with the first and we retest and deal with the next part that comes up and so forth. Another important principle is the tissue biopsy principle. It's a simple one. It is simply that hair analysis is a tissue mineral biopsy, nothing more. The reason why this is so important is because it's very easy to make the mistake of trying to analyze bones, blood, or some other organ from a hair analysis, forgetting what we're really showing on the hair test. You may infer what is going on in other compartments of the body, but what the hair analysis is telling us directly relates only to the chemistry of the soft tissues, the inside of the cells and the interstitial spaces of the soft tissues. It's very important to keep that in mind and that we are looking at a tissue test only. Another important principle is called the fallacy of replacement therapy. Many professionals and therapists using hair analysis are using replacement therapy. If they see a low copper on the chart, they give copper. If they see a low zinc, they give zinc. It should be apparent by now that this approach is not only not effective, but it is irrational. Mineral balancing science makes a point of avoiding replacement therapy. It may be that what is given on the supplement recommendation page on the hair analysis chart is actually low. Manganese may be low and we will recommend manganese. Or potassium is low and it will recommend potassium. However, that is a coincidence. First, you have to look at the whole compensatory system and the subtle mineral interactions and compensations. Then it's necessary to look at the entire chemistry, find out what's going on, and finally recommend nutrients to correct that chemistry. We do not merely replace minerals. It just doesn't work. This is why many experiments with hair analysis seem to fail, because the researchers are using a replacement concept. For example, if they give 100 rats zinc and the zinc level failed to come up, that's because they were using replacement therapy. They were just giving one element. They didn't have the whole picture. So it's a principle. Don't do replacement therapy. For example, if a person sees a high lead level and you say, well, I know that calcium opposes lead, so I'll give calcium. For many slow oxidizers, this won't work. Replacement therapy works occasionally, if you're lucky, if you hit it right. But in general, it won't work. These principles are what separate mineral balancing science from all the other ways that hair analysis is being used today. It is being used today to detect toxic metals, to obtain an idea of an individual's nutritional status, and it's being used by all kinds of people with all sorts of backgrounds. However, understanding these principles thoroughly and using them in every case are what distinguishes mineral balancing science. It has been my experience that people will come to me with heavy metal toxicity, for example, and they already have had a hair analysis. They've already taken vitamin C or chelation therapy, and it doesn't work. When we apply these principles, however, and analyze what's going on, and use the system I'm describing, all of a sudden we begin to achieve results. It's the subtleties that are responsible for the success. And this is the difference between the mineral balancing and what the other laboratories are doing. The final principle is called the summation principle. We'll take a lot of time on it because it's really a conglomeration of many factors or components, each of which have to be explained. The summation principle states that each reading on a hair analysis is a sum of the metabolic events occurring in that tissue. This may seem simple. However, to understand a mineral reading, we will have to identify, as much as we can, what the components of that sum are. This, again, is a great difference between mineral balancing and other systems. We are going to make an attempt, in each case, in every mineral level, on every chart, to assess what are the components that make up this reading. For the remainder of this tape, we are going to talk about the components of a hair mineral reading. First, I'll state what the mineral components are, and then we'll discuss each component. One component is what we might call normal metabolism. That is, the hair is a tissue, and it has its own normal mineral levels. This is generally represented by the normal values. Another component is the pathological storage or accumulation of a mineral in the tissues. This is often referred to as biounavailability. Another component is the pathological loss of a mineral from the body through the hair. Another component is the physiological excretion of a mineral through the hair. Another is the retention of a mineral in another organ of the body, which causes a lower hair analysis reading than is actually the case. This is referred to as mineral retention or storage. Another factor is called displacement, in which you're looking at a mineral that has been displaced upward by a toxic metal. And finally, certain other factors include excessive consumption of certain foods, which may affect the readings, medications, which may affect the readings, and occasionally, rarely, laboratory error or environmental pollution, such as swimming pools or shampoo, that may also contribute to the reading. The remainder of this tape will discuss these components. Once again, it is important that we have them in mind at all times in order to fully understand a hair mineral reading. Now, before beginning, I want to emphasize again that what we're going to discuss are not principles, but they are components of readings. The principles we discussed are before, and they are principles because a principle is something that applies in every case. The hologram, the field effect, the domino principle, the critical factor, nonlinear nature of the body, systems principle, minerals system, the compensation principles, the averaging principles, tissue biopsy, layers of adaptation, and fallacy of replacement. These apply in every case. The principle of summation applies in every case, but the various components that can make up a mineral reading do not apply in every case. That is, in one case there may be bioavailability, for example. Sometime there may be a medication. The possible components must be kept in mind, even though they might not necessarily be taking place, whereas all of the principles are in action. Now we'll begin with normal metabolism. This is fairly straightforward. If there were no other components occurring, if there were no pathological loss, pathological excretion, displacement, defenders, and other phenomena, what you would have is a picture of the normal mineral metabolism in the hair. It is a sort of baseline of what the hair itself uses and accumulates in the way of tissue minerals, and it is represented by the normal values on the chart. Now let's consider bioavailability. This is a very curious phenomenon, and it's a phenomenon developed by Dr. Pawlak through hair analysis research. It is not applicable to blood analysis and other analyses. The concept is that it is possible to have a mineral present in the soft tissues without it being available for use in metabolic activities. The mineral is biologically unavailable. The reason for this phenomena is that some other factor, such as a nutrient or an enzyme, that is required to release that mineral or to activate that mineral is not present in sufficient quantity. And so the mineral simply accumulates in the body. Many illnesses are the direct result of this phenomena, through the excess accumulation of a mineral in the body tissues. The most obvious example of this, and probably the most frequently seen, is calcium buildup in the soft tissues. When there is a deficiency of sodium potassium, calcium begins to accumulate in the soft tissues. It accumulates throughout the soft tissues and later in life frequently causes illnesses such as hardening of the arteries, arteriosclerosis, kidney stones, arthritis, and so forth. Once again, the idea is there is a deficiency of some other nutrient needed to keep calcium bioavailable. Calcium is not really performing any metabolic function when it is bioavailable. For example, many individuals with high calcium levels have symptoms of low blood calcium, which is very confusing, but nevertheless the case. They cannot mobilize the calcium that has pathologically accumulated in the soft tissues, so they may get leg cramps, become irritable, or have other symptoms that we know are due to low calcium levels in the blood. Yet they have an excess of calcium in their tissues. This is what we call bioavailable calcium. Magnesium and all the other minerals can also become bioavailable. In the slow oxidizer, copper frequently becomes bioavailable. So this is the concept, and the principal cause is a lack of releasing factor. The effect on seen on the hair analysis chart, if the mineral is retained in the hair, is a very high mineral reading. Bioavailability represents a type of pathological mineral retention. A second factor that occurs is called pathological loss of a mineral through the hair. This also occurs when there is a deficiency of a retaining factor. In other words, sometimes in order to retain a mineral, other minerals are required. In order to retain potassium, for example, zinc and magnesium must be present. In order to retain calcium, copper is required.
If the retaining factor is not present in adequate amounts, the mineral will be lost. In order to retain zinc, magnesium is required. If it is not present, zinc will be lost from the body through various eliminative channels, including the hair. While zinc is being pathologically lost, the hair chart reading will be above normal. When the retaining factor or factors are supplied in adequate amounts, the reading of the mineral that was being lost pathologically declines toward normal. It means that the zinc is no longer being pathologically lost. The most important pathological mineral losses we see are zinc, sodium, potassium, calcium, magnesium, and chromium. It is also possible to have a loss of iron, and in fact, any of the vital elements. The third component that may make up a reading is a physiological loss of a mineral. This is to say, in the slow oxidizer, for example, who has accumulated an excess of calcium, when we begin to correct the metabolism, the person will begin to eliminate excess calcium. We call this a physiological loss or a physiological excretion. In both the pathological loss and the physiological loss is the same idea, the minerals being eliminated through the hair. But in one case, it is not beneficial, it is not healthy, and in the second, such as in the correction of a slow oxidizing pattern, the pattern is positive as the calcium comes out. The words physiological and pathological here are used to denote different directions of health. Pathological refers to getting worse. Physiological refers to moving toward health. A physiological or beneficial mineral loss occurs when the body is in the process of correction. This is a common phenomenon we see with all the toxic metals in particular. During the process of correction, the unwanted mineral or toxic metal will often rise as is being excreted. This is a physiological excretion. Calcium, copper, iron, cadmium, mercury, lead, and aluminum, for example, may rise very high. Another factor is the increased retention and utilization of a mineral in a specific part of the body. Increased body retention and utilization of a mineral will reduce the hair mineral reading. It is a kind of a negative component of the sum. Each of the factors we've mentioned so far, bioavailability, pathological loss, and physiological excretion, generally add to the reading. This one generally lowers the reading. This fourth factor, increased utilization, usually occurs as part of a correction process. For example, the toxic metal cadmium tends to replace zinc at many zinc enzyme binding sites. If cadmium is physiologically excreted while on a metabolic program, the body will generally take up zinc to replace that cadmium. That zinc will be taken from hair as the hair is growing. In other words, the zinc will not be available in the hair tissue, it will be retained in other organs where the zinc is needed. As a result, the hair zinc reading will temporarily drop, severely sometimes, until zinc reservoirs are replenished by ingested zinc. This is a common occurrence when a person is on a corrective program. Say they are taking zinc and manganese. On the retest, the zinc and the manganese levels have dropped. And you'll think to yourself, this is crazy. How is this possible? The reason it's possible is because that mineral is being retained elsewhere, temporarily. The hair mineral level will rise again when newly available binding sites are filled and storage reservoirs are replenished. You are now being given the factors that are helping the body retain and use that mineral, expelling toxic metals which were pathologically occupying the binding sites. Other chemical changes may also be taking place to cause mineral retention elsewhere. And that is the reason why a mineral level can go down. Now, this same phenomena can occur in a pathological situation, too, because in certain pathologies, the body begins to retain a mineral in an organ. The mineral may begin to build up in the bones, or in the lungs, or in the kidney, or in the liver. In that case, you could also get a lower reading due to a pathological mineral retention elsewhere in the body. This occurs most often with toxic metals. So this is an important component to keep in mind, that if a mineral reading declines, or if you're looking at a low reading, you may be looking at mineral retention elsewhere, either pathological or physiological. A fifth component is displacement. When there's a toxic metal or an excessive amount of an essential mineral, it will displace essential minerals from their normal binding sites. Excessive copper can displace zinc, and so can the mineral cadmium. Mercury, nickel, and cadmium can all displace sodium, cause a rise in the hair reading of sodium. The tissue level of a displaced mineral may actually be low, but because it is displaced, it will look better than it really is. If you look at a sodium reading, for example, and it's very high, then you look down and you see the presence of one or more toxic metals, such as cadmium, nickel, or mercury, you know that at least part of that excess sodium represents a displacement phenomena due to toxic metals. The increased sodium is an artificially high reading due to the presence of sodium-raising toxic metals. If a critical amount of the heavy metal cadmium has accumulated in the tissues, you may have a very nice-looking but falsely elevated zinc reading. What we know is that that zinc reading has been pushed upward by the presence of cadmium displacing zinc from zinc binding sites, and therefore more zinc is excreted through the hair. Because of that, the zinc reading is higher than it really is. It's an elevated reading. When the toxic metal responsible for the zinc displacement is eliminated, the zinc reading will decline as zinc replaces the eliminated cadmium. Another factor is the idea of a defender or compensating mineral. This goes back to the principle of compensation we spoke of earlier. We stated that sometimes a mineral is maintained at a low or high level because of a compensation reaction. That is, it is defending or compensating for some other ratio or level. So sometimes when we see a low zinc, for example, it is low because the body is compensating for a low sodium, possibly. Sometimes when we see a high calcium, it may be an emotional defender mechanism against emotional trauma and feeling. A high calcium level protects an individual's nervous system and emotional sores, like putting a shell around that person. So minerals can act as both physical and emotional defenders or compensators. In defending another critical level or ratio, the defender mineral can either elevate or depress the reading. Now we'll discuss environmental factors that can affect hair readings. Certain shampoos. Head and Shoulders is very high in zinc. Celsin Blue is high in selenium. Grecian Formula is high in lead. One should wait about 5 washings after a cold wave permanent, and about 8 weeks after a permanent requiring heat treatments. These minerals are not simply on the hair, they are actually absorbed through the scalp and affect the mineral readings this way. Swimming can raise the copper level up to double because copper compounds are used to purify swimming pool water. It is always important to ask about environmental exposure when you are cutting a hair sample, although we find that in practice it is usually not a critical factor. The preceding are the main environmental contaminants. Diet and supplements can also contribute to the readings. For example, eating large amounts of calcium-containing foods such as dairy products or taking calcium supplements will lower potassium levels and may affect magnesium levels as well. Consumption of large amounts of high magnesium foods such as nuts or use of milk of magnesia can lower sodium levels. High intake of salt or salty foods can lower magnesium and calcium levels. Excessive consumption of fruits, vegetables, and their juices, which are high in potassium, may lower calcium levels. Iron supplements can lower manganese and copper levels. Consumption of large amounts of copper-containing foods, such as chocolate, avocado, walnuts, and seafood, may elevate calcium levels and depress zinc levels. It is thus important to find out what a person is eating, especially if they have idiosyncratic food habits involving consumption of a large amount of one kind of food. Now we'll talk about toxic metals and their effects. Toxic metals may accumulate in the body without known direct exposure for the following reason. Toxic metals are present in today's environment, and if there are deficiencies of essential metals, the body will take up the less preferred toxic metals, which can function to some extent in enzyme systems. When there's a zinc deficiency, cadmium will be absorbed from food and water and will replace zinc in enzyme binding sites and enable some reactions to go 60 to 70% to completion. Sometimes direct exposure is a factor also. Auto mechanics, welders, for example, are prone to lead poisoning. High consumption of tuna and swordfish may contribute to mercury poisoning. Mercury can leach out of dental fillings, but it's necessary to point out that removing the fillings will not remove the mercury that has deposited in the body. Only a nutrition program will do this. Success stories in which all the fillings have been replaced with immediate disappearance of symptoms are due to an individual sensitivity to the fillings, or perhaps something in the saliva that caused the mercury to erode at a more rapid rate. Most patients get well, in our experience, without needing fillings removed on the mineral balancing program. Aluminum exposure is a severe problem today, coming from cans, soda and beer cans, cookware, aluminum foil, antacids, antiperspirants, cosmetics, deodorants, and as a preservative in foods. It is possible and necessary to find deodorants that do not contain aluminum. Nickel exposure can be heavy if a person consumes hydrogenated oils, such as are found in margarine, Crisco, commercial peanut butter, candy bars, and cookies, even in the health food store variety. The amalgams used in dental fillings can also contain significant amounts of nickel. So, toxic metal exposure is always present, and without a doubt, if there are nutritional deficiencies or imbalances to begin with, the effect of toxic metal exposure is more pronounced. Another important topic is the effect of medications. The medications a person is taking will influence their hair mineral readings. So do over-the-counter drugs and social drugs. Numerous multivitamin products are too high in copper for the majority of people. Calcium, too, is very high in many products. One mother recently showed a very high copper on her hair test. Her baby showed a very high copper. And I discovered that her prenatal vitamin contained 4 milligrams of copper per tablet. That amount of copper was definitely affecting both her and her offspring's copper levels. Mercury compounds are found in some diuretics. Birth control pills and the copper IUD can contribute a tremendous amount of copper. Cortisone tends to raise potassium levels. Antacids are often high in aluminum. Many antibiotics work by mobilizing copper from the liver. By mobilizing copper, the antibiotics can also affect sodium and potassium readings and correct them. Streptomycin chelates manganese, and hydralazine creates a manganese deficiency. These are just some of the very complex interactions between medicines and the hair analysis chart. This is really a study all its own. A final factor that can affect hair analysis readings, which occurs rarely but is always something to keep in mind because no one is perfect, is that there may be a laboratory error. It can be in any phase of the process. It can be in the cutting of the hair, For example, it's possible to use nickel-plated scissors, and the nickel flakes off into the hair. Or you may accidentally put the distal ends of the hair sample into the sampling envelope instead of the first 1.5 inches closest to the scalp. At the laboratory, there could be a typographical error, or an error in transferring numbers, or an error in dilution of the hair. So it's always important to keep in mind this possibility. If a reading comes back that doesn't make sense, the laboratory will rerun the test for you free of charge. Often they'll have a little hair left over from the analyzed sample, which the lab keeps. If enough hair was left over, that can be run. Otherwise, you would need to send in another sample. Analytical research laboratories has very strict quality control at every level and very good record keeping. Some laboratories are not keeping as good records, and your test is only as good as your laboratory. Recently, we found that one of the largest tissue mineral analysis laboratories was only doing quality control at the end of their procedure, and they were not doing quality control at the intermediate steps. It's very important that controls are run every 10th sample or so, that in-house controls and National Bureau of Standards controls are used, and that the machinery, which is very delicate, be recalibrated frequently. And in the hair analysis field, unlike the blood analysis field, you have to be extra careful which laboratory you use, because it is a new field with less standardized and less experienced people. This sums up the factors that can influence a hair mineral reading. What we'll do now is review them, because once again, for every reading, each of these factors should be considered. First, we have normal mineral metabolism, and we're having a baseline reading of the hair. Then we have mineral bioavailability, possibly. This represents a pathological mineral retention due to the deficiency of a releasing factor or a cofactor necessary to allow a mineral to be properly utilized. If it is not used, it will build up pathologically in the soft tissues and elevate the reading. We can have pathological loss of a mineral from the body, which is due to a lack of a retaining mineral or retaining factor. We can have physiological excretion of a mineral from the body. Both pathological and physiological elimination of a mineral will elevate that mineral's hair reading during the time it is actively being eliminated through the hair. We can also have physiological or pathological retention of a mineral elsewhere in the body, which results in a lower mineral reading. We can have displacement, in which a toxic metal displaces an essential mineral from its binding sites, and therefore causes the essential mineral reading to be displaced upward. We can have defenders, or compensating minerals, which remain high or low to defend against or to compensate for other imbalances. We may possibly have occasional environmental contamination from swimming pools, certain shampoos, etc. Diet, and especially the intake of a large quantity of one kind of food, vitamin and mineral tablet intake, medical prescription drugs, and other medications, all can affect the readings. Finally, rarely, laboratory error can definitely cause a change in a reading. Each of these components need to be studied with every reading. And as you work with this science, you'll become familiar with spotting what's going on and seeing which one or ones of these factors is active, which one of these components are more important in each particular case. It's a kind of detective work, and it may take several tests to understand underlying metabolic patterns. It often takes
9 to 12 months, for example, before a toxic metal even shows up. But that challenge is part of the fun of this work. And what is on this tape is really the meat of the mineral balancing science. With practice, it may take a while, you'll be able to understand what's going on. You shouldn't be guessing. By applying the principles and by applying sometimes some very basic clinical diagnostic questions or techniques, we can make sense out of very complex hair analysis readings.